Risky Business, your weekly security briefing with Patrick Gray, sponsored by Cybertrust.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. On this week's show, we'll take you behind the scenes to a press briefing with eBay fraud investigators that took place in Sydney last week. And we'll be talking spam with Cybertrust's Paul Nevin. But first on the show, as per usual, it's time to speak to ZDNet Australia's security blogger and journalist, Munir Kataria. Okay, Munir, now we've seen a bit of, repeat news, which is to beware of bogus Microsoft security bulletins.
Social engineering, la-di-da-di-da, let's move on.
Yeah, I think we've all heard of that one. Run this patch that's attached, and it will not install malware on your machine. I don't quite know how it still justifies a headline these days, but you're right, Let's move on. Gartner has actually come along and said the iPhone threatens corporate security, and someone was always going to say it, but they actually, you know, came up with some decent points, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. I wrote a blog about this in January when they first announced it, just saying that, you know, it's going to increase the penetration of OS X. And it'll just mean more OS X systems out there. So it may do that. But Gartner has some solid points. I was just talking. It's quite good here, though. Yeah. One of the things, what are they saying? Lack of major mobile device management suites.
Yeah, well, it looks like because the security companies aren't really focusing on developing stuff for the iPhone, whereas they are with Symbian and sort of Windows smartphone platform, I guess, you know, locking these things down is going to be a bit of a challenge.
It is. I mean, another one that they say is, you know, a clear statement by Apple that it is focused on consumer rather than enterprise. I mean, that's not a big deal, though, is it?
No. It's like, oh, tell us it's for consumers. Okay, that's going to make it more secure. But whatever. But it just seems, everyone always panics. Remember when people started carrying iPods to work and everyone was freaking out saying, oh my God, they're all walking around with hard drives, with USB cables and, they're gonna pod slurp and, you know, take all of your data home. And I don't think this is a particularly new issue, but I think it really is the point that there isn't as much development going into security products for the iPhone. And I guess, you know, Apple's attitude is that they're completely secure anyway, so why would you need a security suite?
Do you know what? I mean, as far as enterprises go, they tend not to go and rush into new technology anyway. So this is a new product that's just come out. We won't see it in Australia for another 6 months or so. I'm kind of pleased about that in a way, because we'll get to hopefully learn from the mistakes they all make over the next 6 months.
But Munir, you know the guy who's going to turn up to the office with the iPhone. Do you know what I mean?
they are. It's going to happen.
It's not going to be, you know, it's not going to go through proper procurement procedures. It's some, you know, sort of wanky executive, you know what I mean? He's just parked his Porsche downstairs. He's got to have the latest gadget. He's going to grab an iPhone. He's going to walk up to the office and start loading top secret information onto it, and it's going to get owned. That's, I think, what Gartner's saying.
Look, if you were an administrator, what would you prefer? Him walking in with an iPhone running OS X, or him walking in with Symbian, which is already, you know, it's had quite a few issues and viruses and that kind of thing going around, or him running the Windows Mobile CE, whatever they're calling it these days?
Throw him out the window, eat the phone. Problem solved.
Like it.
I think that's all right. Now, next, it looks like in the United States, the proposed national ID card might not get up after all.
Oh, I don't think so. I think it's just one of these things which is like, oh, well, we should take care. But in the end, these things always get pushed through, don't they? Mm. I mean, all that's happened is there was an amendment, basically, according to this article here, amendment to prohibit the forthcoming identification card from being used for mandatory employment verification.
Yeah.
I mean, without it, you can't get a job, right?
Yeah. Now, this is interesting because it sort of echoes the similar debate here. Now, in the United States, they're bringing in this real ID card, and it's, I think, basically, if you want to drive a car or fly in a plane or pretty much do anything, you need one of these, really hardcore real ID compliant identifications. And, you know, with the government here bringing out the smart access card, which is not an identification.
Not an ID card. Let's clarify that. Yeah.
That's right, which is kind of an ID card. You know, it's just interesting to see that in the United States, that there's actually some meaningful debate around this, whereas in Australia, it's, you know, people are more interested in, you know, who won at the footy, it seems.
Well, I don't know. It's an interesting debate, but isn't going to go anywhere. I don't believe it's going to go anywhere. I mean, you know how their politics there works. They'll tag it into some proposal of, I don't know, a new dam, and suddenly they'll have the ID card.
Yeah, this will get up with a policy to provide a free mango to every sheriff in a, you know, southern county in the United States or something. It's just bizarre.
It's going to be pretty crazy. I mean, yeah, I'm really pleased that this happened, and, you know, it's a little bump for it, but come on, it's really not going to make much difference. If the government, they want to do something, they're going to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay. Well, we'll keep an eye on that anyway, because it's probably a sign of things to come for us.
I think it's a bit depressing, personally.
Look, in some more recent news, hundreds of thousands of people risk losing all the money they have in their bank accounts by logging onto internet banking sites using computers that do not have up-to-date operating systems, anti-spyware, antivirus software, and firewalls. Now, this sounds like, yeah, so what's new? There's been a new banking code introduced in New Zealand that came into effect over the weekend, which means if you get owned, someone steals your password and drains your account, the bank can choose to not reimburse you for those funds.
This is a massive change now, isn't it? A complete U-turn, because until now it was always, well, you know, we're safe. We're safe doing whatever it is because the bank will look after us. But no more. I hadn't actually heard about this until this morning, but it is pretty scary stuff.
Well, it's a bit nasty, you know, and the I suppose the really interesting part of this is the banks have decided instead of to try to implement any sort of meaningful security, like, you know, fraud analytics and two-factor authentication, they're saying, you know, you've got to run your patches, you've got to install, you know, your latest security software, even though most of these Trojans that are sold on the underground, you know, criminals will pay a maintenance fee to keep them undetectable to internet security software. So I don't quite know what they're trying to do here.
This is like, it's a smart move for the banks because until now, you know, we've always realized that they will only implement a security system if their losses were big enough. Now they don't have to do anything. They've passed over the blame and, yeah, people are going to get screwed.
Well, we'll see how many people wind up, I suppose, punching the teller at their local branch when they start losing their money.
That might be enough. Is this going to affect us over here?
Look, I don't think so, because the Australian Bankers Association considered a similar code. And then they rejected it, saying, look, this is really our problem, the security of our customers' information. So,
do you reckon it's the banks just testing it out over in New Zealand and seeing what the effect is?
Well, maybe. You know, I mean, it's one of those test markets. I suppose we are as well. But, yeah, it's sort of hard to know.
I wouldn't want to see this coming over here. I would hope that there'd be some massive objections if they even thought about bringing this out over here. It's very scary.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was a round of press, you know, pretty nasty press for the banks when the ABA considered the same thing. So, yeah, I don't know that they'd want to try it here. But it sort of seems ridiculous given that one of the central tenets of security is never trust the client, you know, and all of a sudden they're saying, well, let's make all of them experts in systems administration. It just seems a bit rich.
It does. It's pretty, pretty sad. I don't know. There's going to be all sorts of like insurance and stuff, a whole new industry growing out of this if this actually does happen.
Well, yeah, we'll just see. I mean, I think it's the case in New Zealand is that they reserve the right to conduct. Oh, this is an interesting thing too. They reserve the right over there now from under this new code to conduct a forensic analysis on compromised machines or the computer of a customer who is claiming to be a victim of fraud. So that means potentially you lose all your money and then some, you know, goon from the bank comes along and confiscates your computer, you know. It's like, talk about a bad day getting worse.
You know? Dear, no, I don't like this at all.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. Now, we've seen also Yahoo Instant Messenger is being used to spread phishing attempts.
Oh, God, that's nothing new either. You know, yeah, I mean, this kind of thing has happened for so long.
I mean, we need the bad guys to think of something new. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
If you're listening out there, I don't know if we're a conduit for news to the underworld, but, you know, if you guys are listening, can you think of something interesting for us to discuss next week? That'd be great. Now, look, you and I actually got to sit in the same room earlier. Not earlier this week. Last week, we got to sit in the same room when we were both in Sydney to discuss Romanian fraudsters with eBay's trust and safety guys.
That was a bit odd, wasn't it?
It was a strange
surprise when they came over and all they'd talk about is Romania.
Well, they flew me 750 kilometres to that event. They put me up in a very nice hotel. It was the Four Points Sheraton in Darling Harbour. Lovely, actually. Nice view. And a view of our old office at ZDNet.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, which is now covered in scaffolding, a little bit disturbing. So, yeah, I mean, they went to a lot of effort to fill that room with journalists. And then at the end of it, they said, yes, there was a lot of fraud in Romania, and we dispatched some people and some equipment over there, and we fixed it.
And they wouldn't tell us how much equipment. They said a few, several hundred arrests. They wouldn't say exactly how many.
They wouldn't say how many arrests. They said it had a measurable impact on fraud. And it's like, oh, okay, well, if it was measurable, what is the measure?
Give us a measure.
And they were like, Give us a measure. Oh, Will, we don't have precise figures.
Yeah.
You know.
I just thought it was a crazy idea, though, because this guy was saying that they noticed that, you know, there was a big gap. I mean, it was a good story. There was a big gap. They had these criminals there who were young and knew what they were doing. And the guys who were supposed to prosecute them hadn't even used the computer before.
Yeah, just to catch up, listen. I mean, eBay gave a presentation to journalists about their efforts in Romania, where they found a lot of their fraud investigations were leading to Romania, and they decided to do something about it by helping to educate the law enforcement types. They even had a situation where the investigators who were computer literate were conducting investigations from cyber cafes where the bad guys were doing the scams.
Same machines they were using.
Yeah, so I guess the bad guys were probably keylogging the good guys.
Yeah. If they were smart, and we know that they are very smart, so yeah.
But look, I think that briefing, and I'm actually playing a bit of audio in that later on in the show, Munir, but
right.
I think the one thing that was odd about that briefing, and I suppose this is a section that I sort of cut out to include in the podcast, it's not going to go into the podcast,
yeah.
Is we really did try to pin them down on numbers, and they weren't having it.
No, none of it. I mean, we've got it all on tape as well. I've got it all on video.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure which bits to use, because I don't know what bits are relevant, you know? It's all a bit fluffy.
It was a bit wishy-washy. And they said they donated computers and digital cameras to investigators in Romania. And we said, okay, how many computers? And they said, oh, we can't tell you that.
It's crazy. I asked that question as well. It's like, you know, instead of, because they were totally trying to re-educate their entire, the legal, their law enforcement and the legal system. And they were giving them all internet connections and computers and digital cameras. It's like, how much are you spending there? The fraud must have been massive. We know these companies don't give away money just for the hell of it, you know?
Well, maybe they do if it's a marketing exercise. I mean, look, flinging one computer over to a police station in Romania is a great way to call a press conference, I guess, you know, but it, look, I'm not that cynical, right? but the fact is, you know, really from what they told us, they gave us no solid information.
No.
There could have been anywhere between, you know, 1 and 600 people from eBay on the ground there. They could have given away one computer, or they could have networked the whole bloody country. There was just no way we were going to know, because eBay is notoriously tight with information. They used to quote that figure as their fraud rate, 0.01%. You remember they always used to quote that silly figure. They don't quote that anymore.
Mm.
And when you ask them to explain why, they say, oh, well, it's a basket and varying and look over there. You know, it's like... Well, did the fraud rate go up? And they're like, well, it fluctuates. Yeah. And you're like, well, did it go up? And they're like, well, the real issue is. And it's just, it's unbelievable. We'd even ask for things like statistics on how many consumers actually report problems to eBay. They won't even give that up to us.
No.
They won't say, you know, how that number has fluctuated, what the sort of dollar terms of those complaints are. They won't give the real information. And I think to an extent that it's not really an eBay problem. It's a industry-wide problem where companies do not want to talk about this fraud stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, Munir, look, thanks a lot for your time this week, mate. And we'll speak to you next week.
Excellent. Look forward to it, mate.
That was ZDNet Australia's Munir Katadia on the line from Sydney. Munir and I were actually at the same press conference last week. As you already heard, eBay flew me to Sydney to attend the press briefing there. Matt Henley, a senior manager of eBay's Technical Investigations and Analysis Group in the United States, was in town to deliver some workshops to law enforcement agents in Sydney. He's been battling fraud in Romania for 3 years, so instead of a feature interview this week, we'll be running audio from the press conference. Matt Henley is the first speaker, but you'll hear another speaker. That's former Australian Federal Police officer turned eBay Australia's Director of Trust and Safety, Alastair McGibbon. He's easy to spot. He's the one with the Aussie accent.
My name is Matt Henley. I started with eBay a little over 7 years ago. Actually started in the information security organization. Over time, we've dealt more and more with the actual platform fraud that occurs. About 3 years ago, due to our relationships with law enforcement, we were starting to see more and more of our investigations leading to Eastern European criminals. The more we looked into that, the more it was apparent that it was coming out of Romania. Really a high percentage of the fraud that we were hearing about from law enforcement was coming from this one country in particular. So we decided as a company to actually form a team to address the issue. The team consists of analysts, engineers, law enforcement relation folks, lawyers, and myself. Our biggest hire was Albana Spasova. If you cover any sort of Eastern European kind of crime, cybercrime in general, she's kind of considered the expert within the EU. She's actually Bulgarian. So we hired her 2 years ago with kind of giving her the task of, you know, A, assessing what the problem is in Romania, why this is an issue, and, you know, how we can help address the problem in general. So she spent the first probably 3 months really just doing a lot of interviewing of government folks within Romania, talking with victims who had been defrauded through the Romanians, really just trying to figure out why this was happening. We came down to two major issues that we saw there. The first was they have a huge technology gap between generations. That's something that's somewhat normal in every country, but in Romania it was just enormous. We had, 25 to 30-year-old criminals that were, you know, some of the brightest people we've dealt with. And then you mix in the prosecutors and law enforcement and magistrates who some of had never been on a computer, period. So the issue was that, you know, it was kind of an open environment where they could go in and commit these crimes without any recourse, because the people that are responsible for going after them, you know, just did not have the ability to understand the crimes. So to address that, that was our major one. We started looking at, you know, how we could close that technology gap. So we had two major initiatives. The first was dealing with the National Institute of Magistrates, which is in Bucharest. It's an educational institution that all of their judges go through, and it's also used for continuing education throughout, you know, the life of a judge. We developed a program with them. It's kind of a train-the-trainers program. So we invited other industry partners, such as Visa and MasterCard, who also have issues over there, to set up a training program where we brought a representative from each county within Romania to Bucharest for 2 days. And the train-the-trainers program, the idea was to not only get them to understand what was going on, what the crimes were, how they could be tried, but also to teach them how to, in turn, teach these to the other magistrates. So we actually did that for a year and then came back and had them present the same material back to us. So it was a way of really enforcing that this would be taught throughout the country. The second big one was in the fall of last year. We did the first National Cybercrime Conference in Romania. We co-sponsored that with Microsoft. We had, I believe, over 200 law enforcement agents, prosecutors, and magistrates there, including the Attorney General. So this was a really good show, both on eBay's part of pulling it together, but also, you know, getting really high up officials to come to an event like that to really have them understand and address that this is an issue. And then throughout the, you know, kind of the 2 year process, we've spent time just really kind of a roadshow around Romania. Both training law enforcement, but the events really got us the contacts we needed. And then, you know, we kind of sent Albana and some engineers out to really get them up to speed on, you know, how to do online investigations. The second major issue that we saw when we were there is a resource issue, both from technology and human resource side. Similar to other countries, they base a lot of their resource allocation on population. So majority of the resources go into Bucharest. Through Albania's assessment, though, we were seeing the fraud was coming from these smaller towns outside of Bucharest, you know, 50 to 100,000 people. And that's where the majority of the fraud was, but next to no resources were going into these. Râmnica Vâlcea is one of the big towns that we visited and spent a lot of time in. When we first went there, they had a backlog of 200 cases, open eBay cases, that they literally just did not know what to do with. Visiting the police force, they didn't have an internet connection. They were using the same internet cafes that the bad guys were using to conduct their investigations, which was obviously a big concern to eBay. So eBay purchased internet connections for their police department. We donated computer equipment. We partnered with both European governments and our own to get them, you know, everything from digital cameras that they might need, You know, just the wide range of stuff that a lot of, you know, investigators take for granted of having access to. They just didn't have it. You know, they share one car. So really just trying to do the best that we can't help with the human resource side, but we can definitely help to make sure that they have the equipment that they need in order to support doing online investigations. Throughout then, we've now just continued to help work down the backlog of cases. We've had hundreds of arrests over the last 3 years. It's been a lot more successful than we even thought it was going to be at the beginning. And we've continued to work with NIM, the National Institute, to continue to do training. We have Albana there. She's there monthly, and I'm there two or three times a year. And we just have a really good open relationship with them. And the law enforcement in Romania is now become one of the best that we deal with as far as just the desire to make this go away, right? They don't want this in their country. And, you know, really trying to not only have it being an eBay issue, but trying to bring in, you know, other industries that see Romania as a, you know, stopping point whenever it comes to either doing commerce with them or, you know, working investigations, really trying to bring them, you know, all together where we can kind of help solve this problem. And it's been very successful, and we hope to continue working there and keep pushing, you know, to get them more investigators and more prosecutors and, you know, really ramp up the resource side of it.
Instead of trying to re-educate an entire police force, mm-hmm. Law enforcement system, wouldn't it have been easier
if
you just cut Romania off?
It's not that easy. So that's a very common question. If you cut Romania off, all you're cutting off are the good people, right? And we have a large number of good Romanian users on eBay. The bad guys know how to get around any block. You can fire up an AOL client, and you're no longer seen as being in Romania. You can go through a proxy. So yeah, and also if we cut off Romania, you know, to the Romanian government, that means we're not wanting to work with you at all, and really we lose all the work we've done over the years. So.
Can I just think it might be a good idea just to explain the type of fraud that we're seeing out of Romania.
Yeah,
The Romanians do a very specific attack against our users, and what they've gotten really good at, as we tighten down the platform itself more and more and controlling, you know, how transactions work, their number one goal is to pull our users off of eBay. That's if you follow them like we have, if by chance they get an auction that will go through all the way, they will not touch that auction. That is because we have too much detail. They know that we have the details of the transaction, who the victim is. So they really want to kind of pull it away from our security cameras. They lure them off by, they may take over a seller's account and add an email address at the bottom, right? And then the victim sees the email address, emails the now fraudster, and the fraudster's got them completely out of our system and works that direction. The other one is they're kind of famous for the second chance offer scams, which you may have heard of. In that case, you know, they're at that point 100% off of our site. What they're doing is going to look at people who bid on an auction that didn't win the item. Say your bidder ID is, you know, banana123. So they see that banana123 bid $140 and didn't win. So to the Romanians now, they know that eBay user banana123 is interested in this item and they're willing to pay $145 for it. So all they do is take that banana123 and start guessing at what his possible email address might be. They'll send out 50 emails with the most common domains, you know, banana123 at Hotmail, you know, Yahoo, Gmail, hoping that one of those will hit them. And there's a, you know, it's a very common thing for eBay users to have the same username across multiple accounts. When we get into that, you know, that's where we really are dependent on working with Romanians, working with law enforcement, because at this point it's completely off the eBay system. They're not stealing anyone's account. They're not setting up their own account. They're purely just using it to target and victimize our users. So that's really the The Romanian fraud is to get everything off the eBay platform that they can.
But I understand, don't Western Union operators like actually ask people, is this for an eBay transaction?
They do, and if you see what the Romanians do now, they make the scam even more complex. Well, they'll say, oh, eBay is just trying to collect fees. So if they say anything, tell them, I'm your cousin.
You'll be charged 10% more.
Yeah, they'll call it an eBay tax. They'll say the reason they ask you that is because they're going to charge you an extra $20 if it is for eBay.
So at one end, you'll have Matt working, obviously with bringing other industry into Romania and working with the Romanian government cooperatively. At another end, it's consumer education and putting tools on the site to reduce the likelihood of those types of frauds being impactful and, trying to make a difference.
You know me, Al, I hate to be a cynic, but I've got to ask. You mentioned hundreds of arrests in Romania. Mm-hmm. What impact, if any, did that actually have on the overall fraud rate on eBay? Was it even detectable?
Yeah, it definitely is. I would consider a measurable impact. I mean, it also sends a message not only to the people that are arrested, but for a long time, nobody was being arrested in Romania. So now you've got at least risk associated with the crimes they're committing. So it's not only the 200 people or whatever that were put away, you've also sent that message out to, their buddies that are doing the same thing.
So you say it's a measurable impact. What's the measure? I mean, has there been a percentage reduction?
Well, this is an off-site fraud, of course. I mean, so the difficulty with that is, I think in terms of impact, and I'll let Matt explain further, but you see clearly a shift in the way criminals behave means you're making an impact. I mean, the job in from a law enforcement sense is to ensure that criminals need to continue to change their methods of operating and drive up the cost of those operations.
Sure,
in any fraud work, it's about making it harder for a person until such time as they think that there's too much work involved with crime. And this is clearly one of those efforts to increase the cost.
As a really simple question, did the number of frauds reported to eBay reduce?
The issue, though, is the Romanians are doing everything off eBay. So we are relying on.
But I'd imagine that consumers would first come to eBay.
Some do.
To the police. So has the number of reported frauds to eBay actually reduced?
Certainly, not in terms of matters reported to eBay. I think the key measure of the impact is the way in which you see criminals trying to operate, and therefore, anecdotally. Clearly, we would see a reduction in that type of threat to consumers on the eBay platform. Now, you'd expect either the criminals to move to other places, or better still, change their employment, preferably to something that's a bit more productive for society. I think you ask a really valid question. Because, though, this is not an on eBay thing, it makes it much harder to measure impact. But the company, like any company, wouldn't be investing in these types of things and quite clearly investing heavily in this process if it didn't see benefit to the eBay community. You know companies well enough, Patrick, to know that they're not going to be doing things that aren't benefiting the company in terms of whether it's reputational risk or indeed, in eBay sense, the reputational risk is well and truly tied to whether or not the community itself is protected. And this is one of those ways of eBay saying, even though this isn't a direct eBay thing, clearly consumers see it as something that involves eBay, and therefore eBay will invest in Romania and other places.
Just pop up in Kazakhstan. I mean, some other backwater with poor law enforcement.
Have you already noticed a shift anywhere else? Is there any other places that?
That's something we constantly are watching, for the next Romania. We have a huge law enforcement relationship program.
How outside of the norm was the fraudulent activity coming out of Romania? You talked before that it was a high percentage of fraud.
Mm-hmm.
A high percentage of fraud was coming from Romania. What was that percentage?
I don't know the exact percentage. It was more, again, being off platform. It was one of those things we started hearing more and more from law enforcement. These investigations will take months, if not years, and they were coming on to us and saying, why are every one of these leading back to Romania, right? And that's really the key that led us to say, you know, we're hearing this over and over again. There's obviously an issue in Romania.
So I've always had a view also, just to your point, that, I mean, internet crime by its very nature theoretically shouldn't be geographically specific. I mean, theoretically, the tools can be used by any person, you know, depending on what activity it is, whether it's data brokering or whether it's, you know, phishing sites or other such things. So the fact that there appeared to be a concentration of activity in one country was, you know, clearly of interest to eBay and a range of other companies that operate in the online space. I mean, and I think it's a really important point to make. If someone is committing a fraud against eBay consumers, they don't just target eBay, eBay consumers. Those people have a range of other activities online, whether it's internet banking or whether it's the credit cards or other such things. So eBay as a company, you know, with over 230 million accounts globally, has a pretty fair idea of how those shifts will occur, and you know, and I guess what I've said when I was in government and what I would still say today is I find it odd that there would be any geographic area that is more of a problem or more of a hotspot, and clearly we're addressing that. But just on that issue of the fact that these, you know, criminals won't just prey against an eBay account, that is a really important point to make, that as a company, despite not actually having a physical presence in, you know, no actual sort of site in Romania, the company actually put resources into that country in order to address what was clearly a problem. And that to me is one of the strong messages, that you shouldn't be able to commit a crime in any place and not be brought to some form of justice.
How much did eBay spend actually on the Romania thing? Sorry, do you actually have a figure? Because we've heard that it was a considerable investment, so I imagine you guys would have a number.
I don't have the number off the top of my head, but I mean, we have a dedicated team to dealing with this. So,
I think in many respects it's going to be focusing effort in terms of the company. And clearly, if you're focusing effort on one area, you're not focusing on others. So that's a significant investment.
It's time for our weekly sponsor interview. This week, Paul Nevin joins us to discuss the latest trends in spam and phishing, and he has some interesting statistics for us. But before we play the interview, I thought this would be a good opportunity to explain where the word spam actually came from. Most listeners will know, but some of you out there may not know, that the use of the word spam to describe unsolicited bulk email is the work of none other than the Monty Python comedy team. The use of the word was inspired by one of their sketches anyway. But here's the sketch that created a new use for the word spam, and my interview with Paul Nevin right after.
Morning!
Morning!
What you got then?
Well, there's egg and bacon, egg, sausage and bacon, egg and spam, egg, bacon and spam, egg, bacon, sausage and spam, spam, bacon, sausage and spam, spam, egg, spam, spam, bacon and spam, 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 egg and spam, 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 bacon, spam, spam, spam and spam. Oh, lobster thermidor, crevettes with mornay sauce, garnished with truffle pate brandy, and a fried egg on top and spam.
Have you got anything without spam in it?
Well, spam, egg, sausage and spam. There's not got much spam in it.
I don't want any spam.
Why can't you have egg, bacon, spam and sausage?
That's got spam in it.
Not as much as spam, egg, sausage and spam.
Look, could I have egg, bacon, spam and sausage without the spam?
Yeah.
What do you mean? I don't like spam.
Spam, 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 spam.
Now, Paul, look, spam phishing, you know, spear phishing, whatever you want to call it, this is stuff that's been around for a long time, yet you say there are some emerging trends. There's some, the old dogs are learning some new tricks.
We see with any internet-based threat, they constantly evolve to counter any defences we put in place. Now, spam evolves very rapidly because there's large incentives for the attackers to make money. So if you put in place reverse blocking lists or other technology that might reduce the spam, they will find ways to get around it very quickly.
Mm. And what are some of those tactics being employed by the bad guys at the moment to get around the technologies designed to stamp out their business?
Well, recently the attackers have realized that there's a lot more value to be made in targeting their attacks. Very, very targeted attacks known as spear phishing attacks may only attack one or two of the individuals in your organizations. Now, the effort involved is usually higher. I mean, they have to do some research on their victims to convince them to download some malware or even send them freely via email the material they're after. But the value of that material to the spammer is much higher, so they're using these techniques. And there's evidence that spammers have even gone to the extent of looking for language translation, so making sure the spam is appropriately spelled and the grammar is correct before they send off their attacks.
Well, it helps, doesn't it?
It does.
The targeted attacks do seem to be the most successful, don't they?
That's right. And penetration testing teams know through experience that usually about 1 in 20 people will fall for the attack. Now, that's just a generic phishing attack. And there's examples on anti-phishing website where US banks are claiming that 1 in 5 of their customers has fallen for a phishing attack.
1 in 5, that's 20%.
That's 20%. So if you're an organization of 1,000 staff, at least 50 of them have potentially fallen for all these tricks, downloaded Trojans, keyloggers, malware, or who knows.
Yeah. Okay, well, Paul, that's a little bit frightening, but thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for another edition of Risky Business. Thanks for listening. And we'll catch you next week with more news and analysis. Thanks.